spry you today.
Yeah. Trying to feel spry.
Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, June 29th, 2021, alongside Ian Ferguson. I am Pat Contry. On the show today, we have lots of good stuff to talk about. We have a article about an upcoming game console that'll be entertaining to go through. The Atari VCS is officially launched and has been reviewed by major outlets. We also have a Q&A, a Patreon poll topic. But unfortunately, we have to start with some tragic news about the death of someone who was responsible for lots of goodness in the retro gaming and preservation community. Their name is Nier or Bew. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, Bew was previously known as Bew. Nier was a highly respected figure in the gaming scene, the retro gaming scene, especially, and really left a mark when it came to SNES emulation. They were the lead developer of BSNES and Higan. And Higan was the more technical side of it, and BSNES was the more user-friendly side of it. But they really devoted their lives to this and a pursuit of precision and technical perfection in their code. In addition to that, and you know, kind of raising the bar for what emulation could be, they were also involved in various other things that had to do with retro gaming. I think the last time we mentioned them was when we briefly talked about the Bahamut Lagoon translation that was released 3 or 4 months ago. I think it was earlier in the spring. Unfortunately, they passed over the weekend. They were driven to suicide by online cowards with nothing better to do with their time. It has been said when reading about Nier's passing that for some people, the internet becomes, you know, some people differentiate, you know, in real life and online life. But when you are so associated with a scene that is online focused, your online life is your real life. And if you feel like you have nowhere to turn, it can take you down some pretty dark paths if you're trying to avoid harassment. I wish I had something better to say or more to say. I know it's not easy to take a step outside of yourself and look around and see that there are people who care about you and that there are people who can help you. I know it can be damn near impossible sometimes. But all I can say is please know that if you are feeling this way, reach out to anyone, anywhere, you know, and get some help. I hate having to say this. We've talked about this sort of thing at various points over the podcast's lifetime, and I wish there was something better to say, but just know that there's help out there.
Yeah, it's always a tragic loss when, especially someone who's like a genius, is gone way too soon. Let's see. Yeah, I'm looking at this article recapping what Nier had done. Besides, you know, the most accurate emulator available for the Super Nintendo, and I was talking to Daniel, our pal Daniel, about that. He knows more about it, about how hard it was for some Super Nintendo games to be emulated perfectly because they do things differently with the clock within different games. So it's like it's not a one size fit all emulation thing. So this was the best emulator to use. Nier actually helped me personally. So I have a small personal experience with them. It was, I was trying, and if you remember, I was trying to capture the Campus Challenge ROMs, which are a little bit more complicated to get working. Right. They don't work on any of the, you know, like SNES 9X or ZSNES, which I preferred for its like just ease of use. I use ZSNES for a lot of emulation. So I try to get it up and running with BSNES. I try to get it running and I couldn't figure it out. So Evan from SNES Central said, oh, why don't you get in touch with, at the time, I think it was a Bew. And so we DM'd and they helped me. They helped me just get it up and running. The ROMs like took time out of day, but okay, yeah, I can help you out. I'm like,
goodness of their heart. Clearly, this was their passion. Clearly, they loved this.
Yeah.
So
didn't have to do that. You know, someone that worked on an emulator and made it is helping me just fire up the ROMs. You know, so very kind just from the small experience. You know.
I would say if anyone is interested in who the person was and what we lost, there is a great article from March 8th, 2021 by Patrick Klepek on Vice. It's an article about Nier, and it goes over their 23-year journey to get Bahamut Lagoon localized perfectly. So,
according to this, they also scanned 1,200 Super Nintendo games, 1,200 down to the circuit boards. In pursuit of long-term preservation and truly cycle-accurate emulation that covered all possible edge cases. That's super dedication. You need someone like that to step up, you know, in order to help get this stuff done. You know, you need someone super passionate and really cares about this, or else who else is going to do it, basically. That's sort of the mindset sometimes goes into this. Like, I better do it, make sure it gets done. So, yeah, sad news, but hopefully we can celebrate Nier's life and people can look into what they've done and give them recognition, you know, over all this hard work over the past decades. That's all I can say about it. All right, Ian, what did you do this weekend?
What did I do this weekend? I played Mario Golf.
All Super right. Rush. You're looking forward to that? You're a big fan of the series?
You're
a big golfer.
I love golf.
You're a scratch golfer, I've heard.
Yeah, I love golf video games. I generally like the Mario Sports series quite a bit. I was very much looking forward to Mario Golf Super Rush. I will start off with what I'm going to say by saying that what is available there as the core game, the physics of the game, the input, how you play it, is great. It's fine. It's fun. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a bit disappointed. Honestly.
Not enough water.
So
too much water.
Too much water.
Too much water traps.
So my main complaint comes down to how the game is structured. When the game was in previews, we all saw the rush mode. I think they were calling it basically the speed golf mode.
Speed golf with some. There's some fighting in there. Some power ups.
Basically, you could charge into other characters and stuff like that.
It's Mario Kart but golf.
I want to say speed golf is actually a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to play. Everyone takes their shot, and you all run at the same time. There's your normal walking speed, there's faster, and then there's a dash. And when you use the dash, you can knock people over and cost them time, which gets you, obviously, to the ball quicker. And it goes by strokes first, but then when everyone ties up by stroke, it looks at the speed with which you were able to do it.
Sure.
It's fun, it's frantic, I enjoy it. My problem is, the game is really kind of separated into three types of golf. There is normal standard golf. There is the speed golf. And then there is something that they introduced called XC golf.
Which I'm assuming
would be cross country.
Sure.
Cross country golf. So in speed golf, when you finish a hole, you wait for everyone else to finish it. Tallies up the time, and then you go on to the next hole, and everyone starts off again.
You said, though, you still get more credit if you get the lowest amount of
strokes. Well, yeah. So if you were to all tie by strokes, the person who is the fastest would be the victor.
So then does it make sense just to take your time then still, and just to make sure you have accurate shots?
Yeah, you want
to
be fast and accurate.
Okay.
Cross-country golf, the XC golf, when you get it into the hole, it immediately tees you up just slightly outside that hole, and you have to hit it to the next hole. So when you're doing the speed golf, you can go through 9 normal holes or 18 holes. When you're doing the XC golf, you get a map, and it shows you all the holes that you have to hit. You get an overall time limit. You get 2 minutes to make each shot, and if you don't, I believe you are penalized.
2 minutes to hit each hole or each shot?
Hit each shot.
To get to the next shot.
Because you have to actually, you have to maneuver the entire course.
Oh, you have to run around the mountains?
Right. And when you finish, and there is no stroke limit per hole, you get a total number of strokes.
Okay.
So you get like 20 strokes to hit these 6 holes.
Okay.
So you have to set up your shots in such a way that it's difficult to get used to. The game also, when you're doing XC golf and speed golf, you are penalized with a speed penalty for any club that you have over 7 clubs.
Carrying more than 7 clubs.
Carrying more than 7 clubs.
Including your putter.
Yes. So actually, I'm not sure your putter's included. So there is strategy there to figure out what clubs you want to take with you to hit certain shots. You want to make sure you have irons so that you can get high. You want a couple drivers or hybrids to make sure you've got distance. You want a good approach wedge.
You want a wedge.
Yeah. You want a good approach wedge.
Seven should be enough.
Should be.
Yeah.
So all of these modes on their own are pretty fun. XC Golf, it takes a while. You really have to, like, my first couple times doing the first six holes of XC Golf, it took me a while to really look at the map and figure out the proper way to do it, because it's real easy to just get yourself in a position where you can't get, you know, to the next hole.
Sure.
My problem is, a lot of people, I think, when this was displayed, when it was advertised as Mario Golf with this neat speed golf mode as a side mode, I think people really expected this is going to be a cool side mode. The normal golf is going to take precedence here. It doesn't. To get to unlock more courses and things like that, to just play in the normal golf mode, you have to go through the story mode. The story mode requires you to use a Mii character, and then it requires you to play many, many rounds of golf to unlock stuff. As soon as you unlock the second hole, they throw you into this cross-country golf. You've got to do this cross-country multiple times. You got to do the speed golf. Basically,
they force you to do these other modes to play.
They force you to do these other modes to unlock stuff that you would want to play in standard golf mode. And this is my problem. It's Mario Golf. I want to play as the Mario characters. I don't want to play as my Mii. I want to use the special shots, because all the Mario characters actually have, like, special dashes where, you know, like, Yoshi gets up on his egg and runs and bowls people over. They have special shots that are fun, like it lands and causes a small explosion, which moves balls out of the way on the green. There's a really good game here, and I enjoy it, but they have gone out of their way to hide it behind this, frankly, this really disappointing fucking story mode.
So the Mii story mode is required for you to unlock all the courses in the story, basically. But that story includes all these other two modes that require you to play them in order to unlock this regular course.
Right. But yeah, I wanted... Weak. Yeah, but I mean...
That's weak.
You could have done a simple tournament story mode for standard golf. You could have done a simple tournament story mode for the speed golf and the XC golf. But they really have three fucking lines out at once, and they're trying to make you do all of them. And it's
because like the cross country doesn't appeal to me at all. The speed the speed thing might be fun. I want to play just regular golf with the characters.
The speed thing is a lot of fun. They've really worked that in there, but the whole XC golf thing and making that a requirement to play through, it's a fucking slog, and it annoys the shit out of me.
Just give me golf.
Yeah.
Just give me rounds of golf, 18 holes, and let me pick Mario or Toad or whatever, different you know, stats or whatever. Maybe is Toad a good putter? I don't know.
And I'm only on like I'm on the third chunk of story mode, but it's just like, it's not fun to unlock the stuff. And the actual game is fun. Like when I jumped online multiple times to just play like nine holes of all at once golf, which is not speed golf, but instead of waiting for taking turns, everyone kind of plays the hole at once so that it's faster.
Sure.
It's a lot of fun. The online was great. I had no problems with online. I really liked the game. But making me jump through all these bullshit hoops is annoying. I was hoping we were going to get something quirky and weird like the Mario Tennis story mode, which was actually a lot of fun. And basically, you know, storyline segment, mini game, and then normal tennis. Beat normal tennis, move on to the next chunk of story mode, unlock that course. Like, that would be fine if you made me go through story mode to unlock all these courses by playing normal golf, but I don't want to do it by playing all these modes.
Yeah, if it was Mii mode where it's like, yeah, you get through this tournament, you unlock another course to play that one, keep the other shit separate. Just keep the other modes separate. Maybe have different unlockables with that, but just let me unlock the courses and go through it.
And they pad it out, too. It's like, okay, now you got to do a practice round of XC golf. That's three holes. Okay, now you're going to do a qualifying round of the same XC golf. That's six holes. Okay, now you're going to do a full round of the XC golf, which is nine holes. And yeah, it's just...
It makes you replay the same holes again, or same parts.
It's just... I wish I liked it better. If you like golf, if you like Mario Golf games, you will end up finding something to like about this game. I just wish it wasn't buried under nonsense that I don't really want to play. If I still had to pick a modern golf game, and I might, honestly, this might push me back into playing Everyone's Golf on the PlayStation 4, which was near perfect. That used to be the Hot Shots Golf series. And I guess Clap Hands is no longer exclusive to Sony, so they actually... And I hate playing stuff on my phone, but their newest golf game, there's an Everyone's Golf game for Apple Arcade now that honestly is probably pretty great. I've always enjoyed that series.
Spend your $5 a month and you can get that game. I'll try it.
Maybe check it out. Buy a used copy of the PS4
Nintendo
golf game.
Look what you did, this guy. This guy's been with you since the NES, which was Mario Golf, basically. He's been with you since then.
So
he's been with you for, what is that, 90, when did that come out? 91? 30 years, this guy. This is your audience right here. He's been with you.
My love of golf video games, I have a feeling I'm going to end up with a high amount of hours played on this on my Switch. You'll be able to see that I play a lot of this, but honestly, it's going to be begrudgingly until I get through story mode.
Oh, this I know. It came out on the Famicom Disk System in 87, 4 years before it came out on a cart. I didn't know that. That's interesting. 4 years. Wow.
What, NES Open?
Yeah, yeah. I had no idea. Look at that.
It's a very, very different game, too.
On the disc?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, very different. Different courses. Yeah, there's a lot of differences. I used to know more of them, but yeah, it's a pretty different game.
Interesting. All right. So, yeah. Well, all right. Well, I'll check it out at some point, I guess. So that's what you did this weekend? What did I do this weekend? I watched Bad News Bears. It was on DVR. It's not DVR. It's cloud, whatever. YouTube TV. You save it to the cloud. It's great. You hit the plus and it saves everything. So Bad News Bears, if you don't know, it's 35 years old. It's a movie about a little league little league team of kids that are all miscreants and, you know, a bad team. And it was made into a TV series in the late 70s. There was three movies in the 70s. Walter Matthau was the original coach. And then the most famous actors in it were Jackie Earle Haley, went on to do lots of stuff, obviously. And then, what was the little girl's name who won the Oscars? Tatum O'Neill. Bad News Bears. I'm going to look that up, get the Wikipedia. So it's a comedy, kind of. Tatum O'Neill, yeah. She had come off of, she's the girl pitcher that has a relationship with the coach. The coach used to date the girl's mom. So I hadn't seen the Bad News Bears all the way through in forever. Or I don't remember. I did. I usually catch like the last, when you're scrolling through, you catch the last game. Because the last game in the movie is like 20 to 25 minutes. It's a long stretch.
I remember it being a meaty part of
the
film.
They go through a lot of it. There's a lot of stuff that happens there. It's 102 minutes. It was a box office smash. I remember watching it mostly on Nickelodeon, the reruns of the show. So what's Bad News Bears known for? It's known for having the awesome orchestral score that use a lot of the classics that are hundreds of years old, including the what the hell's the main song? Whatever that's called.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that. But it's a better movie than what I remember. There's a lot going on in this. If you never saw it, I'd recommend it. Enough. Last time you saw it, Vic Morrow was also in it as well.
I was probably early teens the last time I saw it, a long time ago.
So what's interesting about this, and I actually kind of teared up here and there, not like bawling, but like it was touching because it really showed how kids are, and how there's like 12 kids on the team, something like that, and there's not really an arc for all of them. It's hard to juggle between them, but each kid gets their own personality and interactions with the other kids the best they can. There's one kid that's picked on a lot. Another kid learns to stand up to him, and it's like stand up for him. I mean, sees him getting bullied and he originally didn't like the kid and he stands up for him. There's a lot of stuff going on here, but it's really a treatise on second chances with Walter Matthau's character, who's just a like drunk loser, who was a washed up minor league, pitcher who gets a second chance with not only being someone to coach a team, but with Tatum O'Neill's character, which is a surrogate daughter character, and he fucked it up, relationship with the mom and with her. And it's a second chance for these kids who are looked at as losers, by the other teams. They don't show them getting picked on at school, but it's referenced. They get picked on at school for how bad they are. But it's also a nice look at over-competitiveness with adults forcing it on kids. There's a lot in that. And I don't think that was really a thing that much in the 70s, like trying to live through your kids, pushing your kids too much, not enjoying just having fun. There's a lot of that going on as well
that's in this movie. So it's a lot of it. It's a lot, a little bit more deeper of a movie than what you give it credit for when you go back and watch it, at least to me. There's a lot of little things in there where I'm like, wow, this obviously kids enjoyed this, but this is for adults as well. And obviously Walter Matthau was a fucking incredible actor.
Yeah.
By the 70s, he was like leading man or lots of stuff. There was one where he played a thief. I remember watching with Frank one time. I forget what it's called, but yeah. Matthau was fantastic, Walter Matthau. But yeah, check it out. The kids act great. Obviously, like I said, Tatum O'Neal was coming off of, I think she won an Academy Award at like 11. So she was a big get for that film. And then they said Jackie Earle Haley. Yeah, a lot of going on in here. And there's even a little bit of like under the surface, like child abuse stuff. In the last scene, Vic Morrow's coach actor smacks his kid in front of everyone and everyone's horrified.
Right.
But there's even undertones with like Jackie Earle Haley's character. It's like, you know, he doesn't get along potentially or something's happening there, which I think they bring up in later movies or there's some history there. So, yeah, go check it out. Bad News Bears. It was an interesting to rewatch it front to back. Plus, it's well directed and well written as well. Video Game Years 78 just came out on Monday. Ian did not see that. He was not in the chat. But 79 is next Monday. Every Monday, we're doing the premiere of Video Game Years up until 89. And no, the show is not returning. So everyone keeps asking that. But you know what are returning, Ian? UFOs. We have to talk about this. We brought this up. The Pentagon released their UAP report, because that sounds not as crazy as UFO, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon. So what's the TLDR? It was a short report. There was not a lot of details in the report. But it basically said, yeah, there's stuff out there. We don't know what it is. Like, that's what it said. It didn't get into the nitty-gritty of it. Out of the 144 reports, 21, they basically said, yeah, we definitely have no idea what these things are. Like, we're for sure know that these were things there that we don't know what they are. That we, you know. So, yeah. Truth is out there, Ian. Are you excited?
No.
You don't care yet?
I don't care.
Ian's waiting for the aliens to land on the lawn of the White House and say, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
But there was, not from this article, another one, though, that there was five reports, or at least five, of near collisions with our fighter jets. Near collisions. So, fun times. I think it was five. I'm trying to find that, but that's an interesting little tidbit. So it's like, yeah, it was close. It wasn't just like it's out in the distance somewhere. It was pretty close to us. Yeah, good times. Good times. No one's excited about that. No one thinks that's a big deal. I guess we don't care anymore. We're like, yeah, whatever. Who cares? We got COVID to deal with. That's okay.
When they're trying to actually make contact with us, I'll care. But I'm not concerned.
You're not concerned unless it's like, okay, give us warp drive or shut up, basically.
Yeah.
either kill us or give us warp drive. Then I'm interested.
Yeah, basically.
Was there an anniversary we passed over that we should have talked about?
Sonic's 30th anniversary. Yeah, we did. We passed that over. And we should have talked about it because I love the little blue guy. I love his games.
The blue blur.
I love him dearly. But what I really want to focus, I mean, that was a week ago. But what's worth bringing up is that Sonic's 30th birthday was commemorated with a nearly 2-hour long online concert, the Sonic Symphony. And it was wonderful.
They give out hot dogs to the crowd?
No. it was excellent. It was one of the rare times I've seen a fan base all enjoy something at the same time. No one complained. Everyone had really nice things to say about it. I threw it on at work, and it was excellent. They started off, basically, they did 45 minutes of, it was the Prague Philharmonic, I believe. And they started with 45 minutes of various symphonic renditions. They did a Sonic 1 suite, a Sonic 2 suite. They did a little from Sonic and Knuckles. They did a really nice Game Gear suite that sounded great. And then they went to intermission. And then they came back and had some of the Sega sound team do some guitar renditions of tracks. And then they had Crush 40, who is responsible for almost all of the like really well-known Sonic tracks from like Sonic Adventure and Sonic Adventure 2, like the themes and whatnot. Mm-hmm. They had them come out. they did some of their songs, and then they closed with a they closed with Crush 40 doing two themes while the symphony played in tandem with them.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It was really nice. Everyone had a really great time. It was excellent. It was fun to hear all the songs. It reminded me of good times during Comic-Con, going to the Sonic Booms, where they would, you know, give out the chili dogs and...
Oh, sorry, not a hot dog, a chili dog.
Chili dog, very important.
very important.
But it was nice. And, you know, for all the crap that a lot of the Sonic games get, because there are definitely some stinkers in that bunch, the people who actually care about Sonic, surrounding Sonic, really do go out of their way to put on excellent shows. Everything I've ever, you know, had to participate in or watch that's had to do with it has always come off with... come off fantastically. You know, really great art, great production. There's a lot of love and care put into these, and yeah, that symphony was great. So I went back and re-listened to it at work the other day because it's archived now. So if you missed it and you're just hearing about this, you can find it online.
I'm glad, Ian.
Yeah, it was nice.
Did you have Sonic from the as the pack-in, or did you just play it at friends when you first got it? How did you discover Sonic?
I was aware of Sonic the Hedgehog vaguely, I think, from TV, but I clearly remember there was one of those PC stores that was big, and it wasn't like Circuit City or Computer City, but it was an independent one. But there was a PC store that was in the Walden Galleria Mall. It was a very short-lived PC store. It was like three fucking stories. And I remember walking.
The computer store was three stories.
It was like a three-story store. I don't even remember what it was called, but like the middle floor was all like video games and computers.
Oh, that's
stuff.
Pretty cool structure.
And I was walking around in there, and it was attached to the mall. I was walking around in there, and I saw a demo unit, and it was Sonic the Hedgehog being played. The level was Spring Hill Zone. I remember it clearly. And I said, I want that. And that was the fall that my brother and I went and raked leaves, and we bought the Sega Genesis Model 1 with Sonic 1 pack in. And yeah.
They kicked Altered Beast to the curb.
Yep.
Like a used up... Oh, man.
I like Altered Beast.
Yeah, that's all right.
A lot of people talk shit about Altered Beast.
Really?
Days. I think it's
good.
Who
talks shit about Altered Beast? It's an arcade game that it ported fine, you know?
Basic as shit, but I like it.
It was the first Genesis game a lot of people played. It's like, wow, this is better than Nintendo. Look at this. It's the first one I played, probably.
It's a pretty stunning port, too, all things considered.
Billy, I probably played that with Billy while he was, you know, had his NWA tape in the background.
Oh, Billy. Billy.
You know what Billy's dream was? He fulfilled it. He wanted to be a UPS driver.
Oh.
Be a delivery man.
Hey, good for you, Billy.
He always be like, I want to do that. And he became that. He got those brown shorts.
Happy for you, Bill.
Good for you, Billy. I think I interacted with him like several years back. I went back home and I saw him hanging out by his parents' driveway. I talked to him for a little bit. It's like his voice was different. He had a gravelly voice. And it was putting on and up. It was a little bit different. Like, I don't remember you sound like that, Billy. He was mature Billy. He wasn't a high school
mature Billy. Yeah,
he was 2 years older than me. He used to beat me up in hockey sometimes when he got pissed. Because that's what the boys do to you when you're the youngest, smallest boy in the street. They can rough you up. They feel like they can't get away with murder. Sorry, what was I talking about? I won't rough you up at ultimatenintendo.com. I'll be nice to you there because there you can get RBI baseball stickers. You can be kind. I'll be kind with enamel pins. In certain NES Super Nintendo guidebooks are available as well there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be kind there as much as you want. Importantly, for you Canadians out there, especially if you're in the Montreal area, the Super Nintendo and NES books are available at Retro Montreal, RetroMTL.com if you want to order them. And there, I think already from what I hear, they've only had the books for a scant few weeks, and they're already like 75% through that batch that they got. So the Canadians were thirsty for it. So yeah, check out retromtl.com. Pick up your copy there. But there's no French Canadian version though. Sorry. And also, I'm going to be a guest, Ian. I'm returning to conventions. I'm vaccinated. I'm ready to go.
Do it.
I'm going to Retrobalooza, Houston.
You're gonna do it.
July 26th to 27th.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I'm off by the weekend. July 24th to 25th. The last weekend of July. That's in the Pasadena Convention Center, right outside of Houston. And Kenny James is going to be there, the voice of Bowser. Remember, Kenny was nice. He talked to us a little bit, at least me, at the booth at Too Many Games a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Super nice a person. He's going to be a guest there. Some other folks there. Come on out. Say hello to Pat. Fist bumps only going forward, though. Handshakes are done. We're past that. We're not in medieval times anymore. Got to protect ourselves. We're beyond. We've evolved. We're doing the Howie Mandel fist. Howie Mandel was ahead of his time with the fist bumps. He said, no, we'll do the fist bump when I see you there. It was also the 30th. We missed out on the 30th anniversary of the N64, but I think we originally said we're going to
25th.
Excuse me, 25th.
25th.
Not 30th. No, don't overage it. But I think we're going to cover it in depth
Since we missed it, we'll cover it for the U.S. release. But I think from here on out, we should probably just start covering the Japanese releases. That's when everyone makes a big hoot and a holler about it online.
Really?
That's what it seems like. Yeah.
But it doesn't make sense. I guess it'll make more sense more like, but for like the Super Famicom, it's a year ahead than when it came out here. So that didn't make any sense for that. It's like, well, we didn't know about the Super Famicom coming out except for Nintendo Power telling us and teasing us about Super Mario World. But, all right. Well, I think it's a case by case. We had that the video game years.
Case by case scenario.
Some people said, well, why don't you talk about the Japanese release? Well, because it's a North American, you know, show. And sometimes we talk about the Japanese stuff if it didn't come out there. I think I brought this up. Can you imagine nowadays if there was a console that was delayed by 1 or 2 years or even, you know, several months between regions? People would be going nuts if that happened today.
Oh, yeah. No,
they'd be going insane. It happened for years sometimes, the years between releases. The PC Engine came out 2 years before in Japan versus TurboGrafx. 2 years. It's like you can't imagine that.
Yeah.
Famicom NES was 2 years in between. N64 was only a few months, but like I said, Super Famicom was a year.
PS2 was about 8 months, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that will never happen again. Like, that just can't happen. Like, that people are too aware. They would go nuts.
Yeah.
You imagine, speaking of, you know how gamers are, how they react to stuff. I gotta wait 7 months to play. No. God, the rage bait videos that would happen. Speaking of Nintendo, Ian.
Nintendo.
The ninjas struck, and they got their pound of flesh and more. So we talked about the Pokemon leaks that happened about a year back. 2019 it was, Pokemon Sword and Shield. There was lots of leaks, information that came up. I think we talked about Nintendo going after the folks.
Yeah, we did. Oh, absolutely.
So, Nintendo hired a firm to track down these leakers, and boy, did they track them down. They hired a firm specializing in online Pokemon company, really took the lead because it's really their properties, first and foremost. They hired an outside firm specializing in online forensics to help them find the culprits over Discord, Reddit, and 4chan. Even wilder were the conditions. The strategy guides were being printed and stored under. So they took like a screenshots of these manuals. And at the time, yeah, they were like basically under lock and key. These like for the
right.
Like digital and almost literal lock and key. This stuff. For example, the Pokemon Company performed background checks on employees, stored game content files on secure computers, restricted access to game working files to a limited number of individuals. Who could only gain access to files by entering a username and password, allowed those individuals to transfer game files only using secure methods, use digital measures to trace and mark files to prevent or unauthorized access, and required users with access to games to files to sign non-disclosure agreements. Physical copies of the strategy guide are stored in secure locations under tarps, and individuals with access to the printed guides are not permitted to bring cell phones or cameras into the areas where strategy guides are stored. So it's not like they said, yeah, sign an NDA, whatever. No, they did not want this stuff getting out.
Yeah.
They took precautions. So then if you're going to leak this shit, knowing that they took this amount of precautions, you know they're coming after you. This
yeah, there's is not no way they're not threats. Going to. That's insane to think that they wouldn't.
This sounds like they had the Mission Impossible freaking sensors where you had like Tom Cruise rappelled down in order. Like, this is, yeah, so they tracked them.
Just fucking absolute huevos on these people.
Whew. And what is it worth? You got
the eggs on them.
I feel good. I revealed what these characters look like before. Was it worth it? To getting caught and going through this rigmarole and having to get a lawyer to defend yourself?
No, probably not.
So it was someone from the printing company that I guess did the printing, David Masonave and his friend Brian Cruz, who uploaded the images to the internet. They agreed to settle, and they will have to pay $150,000, along with the cost of their legal fees. And that might be getting off light that they had to settle.
I feel like that's a lot lower than I would have expected, frankly.
So... I'm not saying they're going to get the money, but it's just like that's proving a point. Like, this ain't happening.
Right.
Like, hey, you can work at the Pokemon company and do and work with us, but you ain't doing this shit. You can pet the Pikachu in the corner, but you can't take pictures of our strategy guys or whatever. I heard they have a live Pikachu there that they've.
Oh, a live one?
They engineered one?
Yeah. I can't wait.
The engineered one. It looks horrifying, but it's cute and cuddly. No, it can't be horrifying and cute and cuddly. I don't know where that joke was going. We're talking about this Air Raid auction.
So,
it's been a while since we talked about Air Raid.
Air Raid likes to come up every once in a while. It's one of the rarest.
It's Atari. A holy grail. It's a holy grail.
Yeah, it's Atari a holy game. Grail. It's an Atari 2600 game. It's well known for a couple of reasons. One, it has a unique look. It comes in a blue plastic cartridge that has a handle on top of it.
A T-handle.
It has a T-shaped handle on top of it. You may also remember Airstrike, or Air Raid being mentioned due to a scumbag seller that we had on the show.
One of the most famous ones earlier on, probably like 2015 or
years ago, where someone was trying to sell a knockoff Air Raid that they had put together with PVC piping.
It was Australia, right? Yeah.
And then concocted a really crazy story behind it to kind of like keep their hands off on it. Oh, well, as soon as like people were like, that's fake. Oh, we don't know that. I mean, this is just how it came from.
Well, if I remember correctly, they said it was like their dead grandmas or dead moms.
Yes.
Stuff to try to like get you to back off. And it's like, no, dude, it's not, first of all, but you're just scummy for doing that. And what we said at the time was that you do your due diligence if you think you have something worth a lot of money. It's like, well, I don't know if it's real or not, but is it up for sale for $8,000? No, that's not how it works. You can't feign ignorance if you're selling something for a lot of money. If it's that much money at stake, you have to look into if it's real or not. But obviously, that was a bullshit story. But I'm saying, if it was real, it's still stupid. So, from this article in Yahoo News. Yahoo News, you're a leader in rare game news going back to the statement events of 2008. Or no, 2010 it was. So this was turned into a Goodwill, this one that came up. Goodwill North Central Texas item processor Alex Juarez was sorting a bin of old Atari games when he came across it and probably recognized it. And that's why, you know, when stuff comes up on Shop Goodwill the past 3-4 years, it doesn't slip by them anymore. They know. Like, you do not get deals on Shop Goodwill for years. You haven't gotten Goodwill.
No, no.
The deals ran out. When I stopped looking really around 2000, probably after I moved here, I stopped really looking into that stuff, 2017. For like 2-3 years when people didn't know about it, you can get some deals. I remember getting some nice computer game deals, like my Ultima games I got for like $50 for three big box Ultima games. Like stuff like that you can find or some, you know. So every once in a while I'd be like, oh, there's like a, you know, a GBA SP for like, you know, $15 with everything. That's a pretty good deal. Like, I picked up a few like doing that or some bundles of games, but it was rare you'd find something that had a bundle. Like, even if the game bundle had something that was like uncommon, it would go for less, but not a lot less. It wasn't still dirt cheap.
Right.
But now things come up. There was the, you know, prototype games. I think there was the sealed Super Mario Brothers that came up the past year or two on there.
Right. Yep.
Wasn't there? So like, this stuff goes for a lot of money. It's just another eBay at this point.
Yeah, there's and people know to check it. You're not going to find something, you know.
So it sold for $10,590 Air Raid. Am I shocked that it went for that much? Yes and no. It's probably the only game that, if you're not familiar with the Atari 2600, that other collectors like you know about Air Raid, just because it's so unique looking and you know that it's the holy grail. There's only what, 2 or 3 box copies known to exist, only one I believe complete with the manual. And again, they weren't sure who made the game. They thought they knew who made the game until they found, you know, the box. And
right.
Like, oh, that's the maker. It is. What is it? Menifee. Like they weren't sure. They thought it was like, we don't know where this came from. And now they're starting to piece together more and more about this. But yeah, who knows how many of this game they made? Could be a few hundred for them not to have any copies at all in the wild. They probably didn't make even 1,000 of these things.
No, probably not.
I mean, we're talking small print runs, like super small print runs. When I was younger, this is, I guess, the employee said, when I was younger, me and my dad used to watch these top 10 most expensive video games and stuff like that. And this would pop up all the time. It's kind of surreal. It's more of a piece of history rather than an expensive game to me. It's weird knowing this will be the only time you get to hold something like this. There you go. That, I think that's wow, the last one, complete copy sold for $33,000 in 2012. That's when I saw in person by the guy. I'll never forget that. And when I saw it, he didn't even have it in a case. He just had, I was like, dude, you got to get
yeah,
a case.
Yeah, you told me, that it was just like raw out in the open.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, here. I was like, here, look at it. I'm not touching it.
Yeah, taste it. Taste yeah, like strawberries.
How does it taste? The Menifee flavor. The area. No. In all good fun, I did say, I said, listen, there's places like I told them about like the greeting card box, like you got to get a protector for this.
Yeah,
it was at that with the meetup, the Southern California meetup group that used to happen. The one that Mike Kennedy used to forgive me. Mike Kennedy used to be at these meetup groups within yelling distance of one another. Good old Mike Kennedy. All right, there you go. Some money to Goodwill right there.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
All right.
All right.
That's it for the intro.
Ian,
Patrick. Besides us missing out on the 30th anniversary of Sonic, your responsibility. But we also missed out on the release of a new game console, and we didn't realize it officially was released.
We did.
It qualifies as a game console?
Kind of. Not really.
The Atari VCS, I guess, officially is released. With milestones that, like, I mean, the backers got it back in the fall. They started to get it.
They started to get some of it.
But now, I guess, it's officially available. I saw a screenshot of it being on the shelves of some almost like a Fry's sort of store where it was like they were stacked up next to something. But we have reviews, mainstream game journalism reviews of the Atari VCS. Again, the VCS is basically a computer in an Atari VCS type shell.
Yep. So the main review comes from Seth Macy at IGN. And basically, it says what we have always said about this.
It was who we thought it was.
What's the fucking point of this thing? It doesn't do any of the things it's supposed to do very well. On its own as a console, really right now, you are looking at playing emulated Atari games. On there.
Woo!
It's basically what you're looking for. Woo! Looking at. My understanding is that there are, it's basically the same as some of the early reviews that we saw. There are apps for like Netflix and things like that, but they're really just links to the website and then you have to sign in and.
Oh my God, really? They didn't really build a store.
They're not for, like, they're not 100%. God. Yeah, they're not like natively coded apps. There is an output in 4K mode, but apparently this thing outputs 4K like dog shit.
Like 12 frames.
also set it to PC mode, which was what they really, which is what Atari themselves and good old Freddie Chesney was really starting to hawk when they realized, I think, that this wasn't going to have anything on it. You can make a console, but if you have nothing on it, I mean, what's the point? So basically, the PC mode, the sandbox mode, opens it up and lets you connect it to your TV to use it as a standalone PC. But even in that aspect, I guess it fails based on its price point. I guess comparatively, there are far better options that are far less of a hassle. And this thing is for absolutely no one.
Let's get into more of the details. So, let's see, it said about 80 Atari games packed in, and these are the same games you would get, for the most part, like on a flashback console, you know.
Atari has actually released 3 volumes of games for the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, probably the Switch. I'm assuming that they're similar to that.
There is that Missile Command game that is a new Missile Command that's on there, right?
I don't know. I would not even. I would not even give them that much benefit of the doubt.
John Hancock did a review of this, and he goes over some of the stuff that you can use this thing for. Like, for example, the AntStream service.
Streaming service, but you can do that anywhere.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, that's available on here, so that at least gets, that can scratch your itch, even though that's, you know, you got to do a subscription to that. So Missile Command Recharged is a game here that is a modern Missile Command that you could play on the VCS. That I don't know if that's a, let's see, Missile Command, is that available somewhere else? I'm trying to give this the benefit of the doubt. That
I don't know why.
No, it's on the Switch. Okay. It's on the
Switch. I don't know why any of these should ever receive our benefit of the doubt. They are all trash. They are all shit. I'm not going to be nice to a single one ever again.
I thought originally that was, if not going to be exclusive, this was at least designed for the VCS in mind. But since, remember, the VCS was delayed from release, like, what was it? Was it a year and a half from when it was supposed to come out? Yeah, it was supposed to come out originally end of 2019. It was supposed to come out. So I think originally this was designed with the VCS in mind, but I guess they probably figured, well, we got to put it out elsewhere. We got to make our money on this, and the console's not out yet. So, but at least there was that. And yeah, because that came out May 2020, according to this. Okay, yeah. That was probably designed for the VCS at some point. So yeah, it's a modern Missile Command. Okay. If you want to play that. Let's see. John goes over playing some of the classics on here.
That Missile Command Recharge that we're touting as being such a big thing is also available on Steam for the low price of $1.49. So you really, there is no reason to buy this $300 hunk of designer plastic that comes with no controllers out of the box.
Oh, that's right. You got to spend extra.
If you want the version that comes with the classic controller and the standard gamepad, it's $400.
That's right.
One thing I will say, I think the little Atari classic joystick controller looks neat, looks nice. Apparently, not only is it a joystick, but you can also swivel the bottom to use it as like a
rotary,
like a paddle.
Okay.
So that's one thing that I think looks kind of neat. It's a nice looking controller, but it's also very, very expensive for a one button controller, so it can get fucked as well.
Yeah, again, when you start to get into $300, $400 ranges of for these products, you have to ask yourself, does the cost of the hardware align with the software we are getting? Like, is there something not lining up here of the, you know, the value proposition?
Or I don't want people to get the wrong idea. I'm not opposed to the little guy, but you have to ask, what value am I adding to this marketplace? What am I going to be doing on my Me Too also ran console that is going to pull anyone away from what they can already get that has a built-in ecosystem and games and developers? It's not that I wouldn't love to see a company, you know, get into the fray, but you're not going to do it.
So I don't know. Let's see where these are widely available right now. Looks like they're still trying to be scalped on eBay for these, but I did see a screenshot of these.
I saw a screenshot of some they were in a store somewhere.
Some store had some stock somewhere. You know, I don't know if it's Target. If I look on Google where I can buy the Atari VCS, this would be a console that, if you sold this with a controller, maybe for like, I don't know, $200, you might have had something with like 100 packed in games. Because like the flashbacks we used to sell all day for like what, like $80 those things cost? You know, $100 for a flashback for like an HD one. So maybe you say, hey, it's a computer as well. But like you can't, the problem is making it a computer. Again, it all comes back to like, you don't need the computer shit. You don't. It's ridiculous at that point. But that's all it is. That's all it is if it's Linux based. Let's see. Forbes said, had an article.
Forbes article, I think, is just a recap. It's a recap of the IGN article.
So what was the final verdict from IGN here in the bottom? They always have their little recap here. Let's see. Did he say he slapped a penis on it?
No.
Okay, he didn't say.
No one did the dick slap him.
Yeah, here's the purchasing guide. The Atari VCS based console, $299, doesn't come with the controllers. The all-in bundle is $399. Oh, you can get it direct or through GameStop. Oh, GameStop has them. Maybe, was that a picture of a GameStop being there?
Might have been.
But it says release date to be determined, not available in GameStop. So I guess you can't get them there. Could I buy them through Atari right now?
Probably not if they're being scalped online. They probably just haven't met what they're supposed to output.
It says, okay, I can buy one unit, maximum three units. God, I think they made probably just enough to get them out to backers and just a little bit more.
Yeah, this thing is dead on arrival. I don't think they're ever going to try to actually, you know, push a bunch of these into stores for people to buy.
Verdict. The Atari VCS costs too much and does too little for me to recommend it. Its 4K mode is pretty pointless, other than it makes for a nice marketing bullet. The number of built-in games is impressive on paper, but there are too few games you'd actually want to play and too many games that didn't age well at all. PC mode is poorly implemented and doesn't make a lot of sense in practice. It would be better to just install 2600 and MAME games to a PC than to install PC software on a glorified emulation machine.
Yeah.
That's an interesting way to put it. If you want a $300 machine to emulate old games, buy an Xbox Series S. At least it comes with a controller for that price. Yeah, the Series S, remember, you put it in, was it dev mode? You can basically make an emulation box.
Yeah.
And then it gave it a, what was the score? A 5. Mediocre. The Atari VCS tries to do something, do some interesting things, but ultimately fails as a console and as a PC alternative. I think a 5 could be generous.
No, I think a 5 is generous because, I mean, what is this? We are too close to this point where something coming out is considered a success. Like, no, we actually need something to do with this.
It's not a success.
This is a $300 paperweight.
Yeah, it's not a success if a product comes out and you got people's money and there's no value there and the thing is basically tossed aside.
Everything you can do on this, for cheaper or better.
Yeah, I mean, you can get, let's see, a Retron, Hyperkin Retron 77. Yes, you use real cartridges, but you get the HD Atari thing. That's $78 or $60. Let's say $60 at B&H, $78 on Amazon. Yeah, you know, there's ways you can get there. Maybe get an Atari flash card.
Or just buy the fucking releases on any console that has them.
Yeah, well, how, you know, if you could get the Atari collection.
Every console's got them.
This has 80 games that would probably only cost you, $20 if you bought on other consoles. Like what's an Atari collection cost on Switch? Can't cost more than $10 per, $15.
I think it's probably $20 for the digital.
To get 80 games?
Thereabouts.
It better not be 20 games for $20. You better get all of them.
No, it's
not. Atari Flashbacks Classic is what it's called. Atari Flashback. So they keep the Flashback name, which I like.
So I think it's supposed to be a $30 game, and it has, doesn't even tell you how
40
much.
Bucks on Nintendo's site, it says.
Brand new, 150 games, which is still a bit much, honestly. Okay. But it is.
So you get more than what you get. If you only get 80 on the, for whatever reason, you only get 80 on the VCS. $40, you get all their freaking games that they have to offer. We'll give you the 7800, 2600. They always leave off the 5200 we always talk about for some weird reason, or they don't include those. It's just give you
makes
fucking
me sad.
Get everything. That's all you had. You had a good 4 or 5 year run, Atari. Give us everything you got from 77 to 83, 84.
It is crazy to think. I mean, I always thought about this back when video game years came up. Atari is always thought of as this megalithic force in video games.
Well, they were.
They were very important in the beginning, but they did not. Their run of relevance was fairly short.
They still had an arcade run in the mid-80s to late 80s a little bit, but like as the forefront, it was like 4 or 5 years. That was it. Then they were done. Then they crashed us, and it is what it is. All right, well, there you go. You know, maybe you come across it at some GameStop one day for $100. You pick it up, Ian. You give it the slap test. No, it's not worth the slap test. Would you slap it for free?
No, not even.
You went sour on the slappage.
Yeah, I mean, you can only do the joke so many times.
It's your joke.
Yeah, I know. I know when to leave my jokes alone.
Oh, wow. We're going there. Okay, Ian. All right, Ian. We are 3 weeks off of E3. It seems like it was a year ago. And there was
everything was longer ago.
There was a lot of great presentations at E3 that happened. Nintendo had a great showing.
Microsoft had a decent showing. Actually, there weren't a lot of great things.
Limited Run had good stuff.
Yeah, Limited Run did. You're right.
Then there was the Intellivision Amico 10-minute presentation that happened. And I remember I said, I should probably redo my quote or edit in. This is going to be a weird turning point now that there's a public face to this marketing campaign and to this console.
Oh, yeah.
That was delayed twice, about to be delayed a third time. That was supposed to come out October 10, 2020 originally. That now you're going to have mainstream games media picking this up or following it and be like, what the hell is this thing? And starting to look into it. And it's happened at much quicker rate than I thought. Jeff Gertzman talking about it with Giant Bomb.
Jeff Gertzman on Giant Bomb. Ars Technica, which we'll get into a bit more. Digital Foundry has talked about it. I can't even keep up on all the places that have talked about it. And there's been some, and as of this morning before we started to record, Sam
Mekovich
from Ars Technica released a full article, a very deep article, going into the behind the scenes stuff of the Amico and what's going on with it and where a lot of question marks lie. The article does a beautiful job of basically covering every point. And I'm not saying that they listen to us, but I'm just saying it covers everything that we've been saying the whole time.
Sure.
Covers everything. So we're at
with some
point,
more with some new details of what we'll get into.
And we've already seen, not even the response to this, but just Sam talking about it on Twitter before this article. We've already seen Tommy try to jump into replies and try to pull the and we've heard that they have certain people from Intellivision have contacted other journalists.
Yes, I hear things.
Yep.
I hear some things.
Have contacted other journalists to give them the old song and dance routine of you don't have all the information, you need the insider info.
Or you're listening to the haters.
Or you're listening to the haters. And I just, before I let Pat jump into the article, because I'm just tired. I'm tired of the Amico. I just want to point out again that if you need to do that, you are failing on a base level as a company, because we're absolutely supposed to be able to form opinions off of the information that you have made public.
This goes back to the beginning, the very beginning of people coming
all
after
the
us.
Way back to the very first time I talked about it, all the way back to me getting a real weird feeling about this and Tommy himself. If we can't go off of what you've put out to the public, then what fucking good is what you're putting out to the public?
But Ian's wrong. There's no physical. He said there's no physical media. There is. Remember, that was a big
thing.
We're
still waiting to see what? Your physical media.
Is there? We should have taken a bet that there was physical media. By the truest sense of the word, we'd be winning that, by the way. All right. So this article encapsulates a lot of things that we've rambled about for years, but then added something we'll get into, which is very important. There was a dev portal that was accessed, and all the information, it seems like, it was either dumped or was accessible to this journalist to really get into the nitty-gritty of what is finally the hardware specs of the Intellivision Amico. What the specs are, what the system on the chip is, what the costs are of this console, and what are the weird philosophies being touted for the devs to follow. So this information is new that we have not heard before, and that's why I think it's important. But there's also things that we've touched upon that are important here that we'll go into. So this started with Sam talking about the stock photos that were super unprofessional. If you don't want to call it false advertising, fine, to Photoshop your console over pre-existing consoles at a major trade show event, okay. It's at least, it doesn't build confidence that you have that, and it's lazy. It's fucking lazy, at least. It's lazy. If you have a real console, hire a photographer or get your own fucking cell phone and snap pictures with a couple of models then, versus Photoshopping image. It's fucking lazy to do that. I'll say that. It's lazy. Either it means
I don't think it's the biggest concern.
But it's lazy, at least.
It's lazy, and where I do think it becomes a bit more of a concern, I realize that other companies use stock photos, as I've said in the past. It's simply because we have not seen anything. We have not seen what Tommy thinks we've seen. We have not seen. We have not seen boot ups. We have not seen extended.
Oh,
we saw
a boot up that was a minute. Yeah. Remember, but like that, he claimed wasn't a minute. We timed that. We did see that.
So it's.
But there hasn't been a lot in sort of the public
so
eye.
So when there hasn't been a lot in the public eye, you would hope that the photos that you would see would be official photos of people holding the actual controllers.
4 months before your release and 8 months after the first release. Again, if these were stock photos, like at an original presentation at PRGD 2017, I wouldn't care. Okay. But we're way past this is what the console's supposed to appear like in use. We are far past that point. We are at the point where we need to see these being real in everyone's hand and examples of them being for your E3 video. For your E3, this isn't, we're way past proof of concept at this point. So talked about that, and he got pushback on that. So this summary is so good because it really gets into why there's not a market for this console because you're competing in a price category with the Switch. So to picture, imagine an online flash gaming portal full of mostly flat 2D game designs with a few 3D twists and visual flourishes, and you get some idea of Amico's visual aesthetic. That breaks it down right there at its surface. You are paying for something at $250, $300 that you're competing with Nintendo at that point. You're competing with Microsoft at that point, at those price points, where we're talking worlds of difference of quality there.
Sure.
It's like, it doesn't make any sense. Intellivision has been frank that Amica was built with budget-priced gaming in mind. Its official specs page makes that clear, with performance numbers that resemble lower-powered Android smartphones. Lower-powered Android smartphones. This recent leak from Intellivision's online developer portal provided concrete specifics about how much hardware power this $250 system and its controllers will eventually deliver. And there it is. We have the specs finally. And the Qualcomm Snapdragon 624 APQ 8053 Lite 8 ARM A53 cores at 1.8 gigahertz. That was the specific information they were trying to remain hidden for all this time. What is in this console? What is in your game console? Why is this being hidden? 2 gigs of DDR3 RAM. The GPU is an Adreno 506 GPU. I'm not too familiar with that. And there you get the rest of the specs right there. LED light string, 15 LEDs per side, 10 LEDs in front, 25 LEDs. What a waste. What a waste of money and depth. What a fucking, like, what a waste. These LEDs. What a waste.
He wants to make a system as cheesy as he is.
What a waste. It's like we want to bejewel our jeans. You know, it's just gaudy and just, oh God.
It's interactive lighting though. It's going to add crazy dimensions. So now we're supposed to look at the TV screen, the controller on the screen, and the lighting on the console. So we're supposed to focus our eyes on three different places at once.
So the big takeaway from the specs is how cheap this system on a chip Qualcomm is. What in bulk? What was it, the price?
Looked like approximately $38.
$38. Your system on a chip. It's $38. This basically Android board. That's what you're looking at.
But it's got to be $250. I wonder why it's got to be $250. Well,
profit margin, which we'll get into.
There's two reasons.
Yeah.
There's a few reasons. Well, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I can say it right now. What we talked about at the time, I always said earlier on that this was a wholesale play. They know this isn't going to last if this comes out. This is going to be dead. You got to make all your money up front.
Right.
You got to make your money on the console. This isn't like Nintendo losing money or breaking even, or like PlayStation losing money and recouping over the years. They got to make their money.
It should be one of the first things that sets off a flag is that this isn't running like any other console business.
No, they're not planning on making their money back on the software or on accessories. They need to make their money the first day. They need to make all their money from you.
Yeah.
That's a huge red flag. It's also a red flag if wholesalers aren't confident enough to keep it on the shelves or other. They know that we can't sell. What software going to sell? RFID cards? Where if they have any influence on the price
by
as well.
By Tops.
Partnered with Tops. That the wholesaler then even realizes, well, we're not going to making that much money. We need to make our money up front as well, because we don't think this company may not even last potentially. I don't know. Maybe if I'm a wholesaler, I'm thinking about that. So this is obviously an exorbitant markup on a console. Let's just say, we recently found out the controller is going to cost $80.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
If you want a replacement, $80 for your controller? That's more than any other console. It's more than the PS5. That's more than the new Xbox. That's ridiculous.
$10 more than Xbox, current Xbox controllers, $60. PS5 controllers, $70. Switch controllers, $70. Amico, $80.
That's two Joy-Cons for I think for $70.
No, I'm talking about the Pro controller.
What does two Joy-Cons cost?
It's about $70.
So, and that's two controllers.
It's one controller. It's two, but it's yes. Still, just looking at the actual Pro style,
it's still more money though.
It's still more money.
And then talking about the specs of that, that's a cheap chip inside, because it sounds like you can do jack shit with the Amico touchscreen, from what this article says. According to this article, the programming and all the assets to be used by the touchscreen are not to exceed 1 megabyte of space, according to the article.
Yeah.
1 megabyte of space you have in order to code everything and all the assets on using your controller. What the fuck? At that point, it's just glorified. It's a glorified touch button with pictures on it, which is what we've seen. Like, oh, select your picture and shark
color.
Here's a picture of your fish and shark. What a gimmick. That's an absolute gimmick. That doesn't need to happen. You don't need it then at that point. You don't need it.
It's not going to add anything truly meaningful to the gameplay.
That's insane. See, this is the information that once you really find out what's under the hood, now you're thinking about why are they charging this amount of money for this shit?
Because Tommy was told that if it was under $200, it wouldn't look like a big boy toy. So he had to charge enough for it for people to take it seriously.
You think that's what it was?
I'm fairly certain that's been stated somewhere. And that's going to cost him. There's no reason for this to be this high. I've talked about on the past on this show that, I'm enjoying the Evercade more than I thought I would. I like the pick up and play stuff. What have I been playing mostly on my Switch? Pick up and play games. I play arcade games. The Intellivision Amico should have been fucking targeted directly to me. I am, for whatever Tommy wants to say, and Tommy would never admit it, I am the consumer who should be interested in the Intellivision Amico. And I mean, the price point and everything, it's a failure. This isn't even coming from someone who wouldn't be interested in this thing if it was successful. This is kind of exactly right in my wheelhouse. I love cheap pick up and play games that are quality.
This is a little kitschy console, right?
I like arcade stuff. This should be something that interested me, and literally nothing about it adds up, and everything looks like garbage.
This is the silver bullet right here from their own dev portal. Includes precise specs for various system elements in order to help game makers begin building Amico software before they receive official dev kits. Before listing all of its specs, Intellivision's own comparison makes the point more simply. We found the ZTE Max Pro Z891 is a good benchmark test and runs a little slower than the Amico hardware. This model of ZTE smartphone debuted in 2016 at a budget price of $100 unlocked. So, the Amico, congratulations, the Amico is slightly quicker than a 2016 smartphone that was $100 back then.
Budget smartphone.
Back then, $100 smartphone. 5 years ago. That's your comparable spec to this console. That's ridiculous. There it is. Bulk rate's $38 per board. $38 is the guts of this thing. Yeah, the shell costs something to produce. This is, this is a $55 console. Not counting the controllers, $55 maybe to make this thing. Maybe I'm out of line a little bit, but the shell doesn't cost more than the board to put together. There it is, 1 megabyte, 1 megabyte for the touch screen. 1 megabyte max. Are you joking?
I just know this. So within the dev portal also, just because we know Tommy to be fairly egotistical, copied and pasted verbatim from an intro to the Intellivision 10 Commandments. And lo, Tommy did play a mountain of video games, some good and many bad. And after much reflection, he carved into a tablet a list of game design commandments, and he did present the tablets to the people. And he said unto them, follow these commandments and you will make good games and all will prosper. And there was much rejoicing. The man,
I'm going to dry heave,
does not have a small opinion of himself.
You want to hear what's in these fantastic controllers? The Amico controller, while the Amico controller spec sheet contains fewer details about its specs and power, it does confirm an expressive ESP32 system on chip at its core. It clocks in at 240 megahertz and are advertised as a low-cost way to drive products in the wearables and Internet of Things industries. Bulk orders for ESP32 systems on a chip can run as low as $2.50 per chip. That's what's running your controller. So it's the three chips, or the board and the chips, cost not even $45 between the hardware. We're not counting, obviously, the accelerometer, the gyroscope, and that things. But we're not talking about a lot of stuff. The Atari VCA makes this look like the VCS is like the Xbox, one compared to this. Like we're talking about like magnitudes of power when it comes to processing right here. It gets into you're talking about the 10 commands of game design that they have for this. It's ridiculous, but whatever. It makes you throw up in your mouth a little bit when you talk about it. It talks about the secret sauce of video games is humor. which humor entertains both males and females. Ian, did you know that? According to their dev specs, did not know about that. This is important though about the profit margins that were reported, and this is where it gets interesting. So Sam, it looks like, had access to an investment video that's not public. That looked like it was, what was it? I think I saw, was it March or so? Yeah,
March 2021.
So in there, it is noted in this probably very sketchy investment video that the cut for Intellivision takes, the Intellivision's cut from the third-party sales
game
revenue
sales. Is around 50%.
50% they're taking from game devs when they sell it. 50%.
We're currently in the middle of a years-long discussion about 30% being too high and storefronts that get it lower than that. And
Epic Games started it with only doing like 12%.
Tommy wants to come out of the gate with 50%.
Microsoft starting to lower theirs. There's starting to be some competitive balance. It's capitalism at work. We want to attract devs to our store, and everyone wins. 50% is predatory. Unless you are fronting the cost to the games in its entirety for this, and you want to recoup your investment, that is predatory 50%. I don't see how any game dev would want to get on board with that, let alone the console that may not sell well. That's ridiculous.
And you've got to keep your game exclusive or add shit to it to please Tommy?
Yeah, I got to work on this game, port it over, and add shit, multiplayer, whatever, couch co-op, and you're going to take a 50%.
You're also going to tell me, which he kind of touches on, you're also going to tell me that I have to cap my work at maximum $10?
Oh, yeah, for the sale. Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense. I don't see how this would be appealing to any dev.
No.
Seems very restrictive.
Sam does a great job. He recaps the Evel Knievel being a port of an existing Android game. Yeah, one that's 5 or 6 years old. Talks about the presentation, leaned on a few games that are already available as free web games, particularly a series of Sesame Street branded edutainment experiences, again, that are free on SesameStreet.org. You almost can't make it up. Then they talk about this. We didn't touch upon this. On Tuesday, June 22nd, Intellivision's marketing team reskinned an August 2019 promo video tied to that year's Gamescom in Cologne, Germany. So that was like a coming out party almost, or you don't like that term. It was, hey, introduction.
Yes,
to the Amico. It was their first, like, we have gameplay footage of who knows of what back then. So they re-released that video with a new coat of paint. Literally, Tommy's skin hue is different. They did some color correction or grading on that. And they just swapped out those, like,
They
swapped out those games that we haven't heard of, like that one with like cats swinging swords, or the duck coming out of the water, or the running Intellivision Man game, stuff that we haven't heard of. They swapped it out with stuff that I guess is probably going to come out, or is more like the stuff that has been abandoned. But why would they re-release a video like that that showed nothing, almost nothing new on it? That's what's so weird about it. The timing of that as well. They said that there was a synced video that should host them and showed it side by side. That's on YouTube. They linked to that where they're 95% the same video. Like, why come out with it? It shows no progress in the past 2 years, basically, on even the games that you're showing in both of those videos. Here's another one. It talks about
showing new games without showing completed old games is just as bad. It's
sure. Last we heard, for plans for an Amico exclusive sequel to famed 16-bit series Earthworm Jim came in the form of a brief animation demo reel posted in August 2020. The video includes one character running through a single backdrop, and the project currently has no release date. That was the only mainstream fanfare before E3 that Intellivision ever got, and it was a demo of a running cycle that was ridiculous. Then there's more about talking about Wii U comparisons in its in the dev docs, which is really strange. Having a touchscreen and physical buttons and input disc has also not been utilized. The Wii U failed miserably. I don't know why you'd bring up something that like is the closest comparison to your console that you brought up before, but still why would you do that? Talks about the input disc. And then it gets into something that I briefly touched upon that we haven't really talked in the detail. Since this is a government-regulated SEC, Securities Exchange Commission, regulating now this investment, about the public face of this campaign and investment and the information coming out has to be 100% truthful if this is something that is SEC regulated. And this is starting now. This is being brought up here. Jay Allard, we brought up Jay Allard before in the past. He used to work for Microsoft. He worked on the Xbox. He worked on the Zune. He was brought on board around, was it spring of 2020? It was fanfare. Phil Spencer even tweeted out, "Hey, yeah, best of luck to my pal, Jay Allard. Best of luck." And there was literally YouTubers that lauded this as, "This means the Amico's going to be huge. The guy that worked on the Xbox." Jay Allard, was it global marketing director, was gone, it seems like, within months. He was no longer with Intellivision. And did an interview later saying, someone caught up to him because it got out like, "Wait, what happened to this guy?" That it wasn't a good fit. He was professional. He didn't get into any background. But he was gone relatively quickly. However, Jay Allard's name was still being used to promote investment.
Until earlier this year, I think.
Yes. He was definitely, if you go to the Fig site.
We constantly brought up, why is Jay Allard still on there? Right.
On the Fig campaign, is he still there today? I'm checking right now if he's still there today, Jay Allard.
I don't think he is.
I know in the Republic he was taken off. Jay Allard is still on the Fig campaign.
Oh, wow.
The one they originally put up. Jay Allard is third in line. You have Tommy, CEO, Hans Ippich, President, European, Jay Allard, Global Marketing Director.
And that's still on there.
That's still on there.
Can Fig still accept money for this?
No, it transferred to Republic.
Oh, okay.
But his name was attached to this, at one point in time, and it's still on there. Republic, I believe he was originally on the Republic one until someone said, "Why is he still on there?" And it was taken off.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So definitely by the Republic campaign, which started in April, Jay Allard's name should never have been used to help get a dime. This is an SEC-regulated investment. You cannot misrepresent an investment that is being being regulated literally by the government.
And Tommy's been shady and slimy about this the whole time, saying that, "Oh, that wasn't what he was contracted to do a couple of specific jobs, and that contract work expired." Global communications director, marketing director is not a, "You were commissioned to do a couple of things and then that contract ran out, so you're gone." That's someone you brought on for name recognition value who was going to add something direct to your team. Why did they leave? So why wasn't it a good fit?
So Sam comes out and straight says it. The Amico team could also be in regulatory hot water if its timeline and association with Jay Allard isn't resolved. A March 2021 video presentation to angel investors, which is linked here, a sleazy website called Neil Patel's Private Deal Room. Where it's one of those things where, "Hey, get in the inside crowd, invest in this stuff I've picked out." They did a sleazy infomercial that Tommy appears on in order to sell it, I guess, to Neil Patel subscribers. According to this article, it was recorded after Allard's last public statement about Amico and reviewed by Ars Technica includes a pledge, this video, that the co-founder of Xbox has been making huge, huge contributions to the Amico team. You can't do that. You can't, if the guy's been gone, you can't say that to potential investors. You can't do that.
This is where
that's a legal thing now we're getting into.
This is where Tommy is trying to buy clout is going to bite him in the ass.
You can't do that, Tommy. This isn't just me saying that. You cannot say things like that to investors. You cannot misrepresent to investors. You can't. This can get you into literal legal trouble, stuff like this. That's ridiculous. System was originally supposed to launch in October 2020, 5 months before that solicitation to investors was filmed. By October, Allard was gone. He was gone by the fall. He was gone. Can't do a video 5 months after a guy, at least after he's gone, that, "Hey, he's making huge contributions."
Right.
You can't do that. And if so, if I'm an investor, I want to say, "What did he contribute?"
Yeah, I
tell me. I gave you $5,000 or whatever. I gave you $20,000. I gave you $10,000. I want to know what Jay Allard contributed. If this is what you're using to pitch to me now after the fact, I want to know. I want to see concrete proof that what he's worked on, That's a fair question. That's not an outlandish thing to want to see. You're using him to get investors. What did Jay Aller work on? Now I'm curious if there's other people that are being either in that. I haven't gone through that entire pitch video or the other people on the Republic page. I want to know who else is being propped up as being a contributor and if they're actually contributing. That opens the door. I want to know who's actually been working on this project. That's fair. This is a SEC regulated investment. These are fair questions to ask, Ian.
I agree.
So the comments are funny because, like, we take it for granted. We've been following this for years.
No, I
now.
Know. It's and that's
and this these are people I'm, seeing this for the first time.
I wish I was a bit more excited, but it's nice to see this, especially come from, you know, a place like Ars Technica that
highly
is,
respected,
highly respected. But this is stuff that has been known. This is stuff that has been known to people who have followed it, and that's not a knock at any journalist who is just not finding it. It's not. It's just I'm glad that it's finally being compiled and presented in these articles that are far less rambly.
Because we're just idiot podcasters.
I'm just a shithead who stutters through podcasts.
We're just drunken podcasters. Some of the top comments. These are again people seeing this for the first time and giving their, you know, unfiltered opinion by being presented the facts from Sam here. The smoke and mirrors talk about Jay Allard smells kind of scammy / chaotic.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard enough to convince consumers to purchase the device, but how are they going to convince developers to design games limited in such specific ways on a console that's also going to have an extremely small audience? We said that as well. Like, you'd be dumb to make something exclusive to this console. If you work on a game for 2 years, we're going to make it exclusive to a console that might only sell to like
Tommy's
going to
say take 50% of your in the thousands if you're lucky sales.
Sure. Someone was questioning the Wii U comparison about how the consoles are set up. Holy DOA, Batman. Yeah, this is stuff that's been common sense to a lot of us following this, but it's just nice to get, not that we need affirmation that we're not crazy, but when you see random people who have never heard about this stuff in journalists basically line up with your opinions, what you've been saying, you know, lockstep for years, it's nice. It is nice to be like, hey, we're not wrong when it comes to this stuff. We're not wrong. I think that the folio understand this mess. This is from Super Chuco. Aged Ars veteran. I think that to fully understand this mess, you have to be aware that Tommy Tallarico is an egomaniac. The point of this system is not to serve an actual niche. It's just so this guy can say he made video game hardware. That goes back to us saying, why not just have this put your games on another platform like the Switch?
Right.
Why not just do that? Be a dev. You know, be a publisher for the Switch or other consoles. Yeah. So check it out. Great job by Sam. Kudos, Sam, for
article.
You found some stuff that we were not aware of. Dev Portal stuff is interesting. Sleazy investment pitch video for March. Not shocking at all. Mm-mm. To discover that being a thing. You know? It's like, yeah, you know it's good when you try to keep these things you hide these things from people. You know?
Right.
You don't want to, you know, that you get some guy that, you know, can't lose investments, spend money to find out what I'm investing in, and you can too. That's just disgusting.
Gross, garbage.
So, all right. Disgusting. Anything else to add here?
No.
All right. All right, Ian, we got a Patreon, don't we?
Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go, you put in some monies, you get stuff in returns, you get writings, you get hangouts, you get the full video podcast. And you get these Q&A poll topics.
Oh, you do, Ian. And we love the Q&As. All right. In first place, in second place, arcade games that you cannot beat as a child that others could, 44%. We're getting closer splits on these two-way races. I like this. And then in first place, 56%, games that remind you of a dark time in your life.
So... I don't actually have a lot, but I have one good example. I don't have a lot of games. I'm sure that there were games that I turned to in my youth when things were going poorly. That probably had a negative connotation for a while, but I've outgrown a lot of it. There's not a lot that I can't play. There's not a lot of music I can't go back to because I associate it with a bad time. But the ColecoVision is a system that I cannot play anymore. I think I might finally be getting to the point where maybe I could give it a shot, but I abandoned the ColecoVision for a long, long time because of it reminding me of a certain event. Basically, this is actually more recent in my life, not like super recent, but this is in my adult life. This happened during the time I was living in San Diego. I was working at Luna Video Games, and I'd wanted a ColecoVision for a while, and I got one, and I took it home. And that night was really like the beginning of the end for me and my ex-girlfriend, who I was dating.
The one you dated when I first moved here, or just about?
I don't think I was dating anyone officially when you first moved here.
Or okay, before
maybe
that.
So that was when our like relationship started to fall apart, and it wasn't pretty.
Was it quick? Was it a quick descent?
It was a little dragged out.
Okay.
You know,
is that bad when you know it's going to end, but it's like you're not at the end yet?
Yeah.
You know it's going to be done.
And I still talk to this person from time to time, and like, you know, we're on, you know, speaking terms and whatnot. But it was not a particularly great moment for either of us. And I associate it with the ColecoVision, like I said, specifically because I remember bringing it home and then that night getting into an argument about something completely unrelated to the ColecoVision. And my only memory of really playing the ColecoVision as an adult, as a person who had one, was during this period of time where our relationship was falling apart. So after I moved out and moved into my apartment, I no longer had the same amount of roommates that I usually had. Rent was higher. I was going through a couple things to sell to get rid of, and I looked at the ColecoVision, and it was the easiest thing I had ever gotten rid of. And it's a shame, because I do like the ColecoVision. I like the games on the ColecoVision. I think it's an interesting system. But yeah, I just haven't really... The few times that a ColecoVision has come back into Luna, and I've gone, do I want this? I'm like, eh. And then I start thinking about what a pain in the ass that time was. I'm like, no, someone else can buy it. So yeah, that's the weird one for me.
But Ladybug is so pure.
Ladybug's a great game.
Fills your heart. Mousetrap, Ian. Carnival.
It's a good system.
Not to go off on how much I love the ColecoVision tangent.
Ooh. Looks like Tommy is threatening to send a legal team after ours. Keep going.
Oh, what? Is that breaking while we're on Twitter?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's going to work out. Wow, I got thrown off there.
Someone just DM'd me and said that it looks like Tommy's trying, but I don't see any proof of that.
Okay. I'll cut that from the audio podcast. All right. So this, unfortunately, is tied to something I really haven't brought up before on the podcast. My fraternity stuff. I haven't made a lot of like mistakes that in my life that I like really, really regret. Joining a fraternity is probably number one of like my life regrets where I'm like, yeah, that was stupid. That was dumb. And it's not like joining a fraternity was all bad. I did make a couple of friends. My roommate, was roommate freshman year. But then we joined a fraternity. Rocco, who was a swimmer, I haven't kept up with him, but he was always a nice guy. A few other people. For the most part, 90% of the people in my fraternity were fucking scumbags and people I would not say hi to if I saw them today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not. Maybe not 90,
80%. It's like 4 out of 5 would be like, I don't want to have anything to do with you. I don't give a shit if we spent years together in the same fucking house. I don't fucking care. So the games I always associate with, unfortunately, are games I enjoy. Unreal came out like early my freshman year of college. Talked about how at college we had the T1 landlines. It was the Wild West of the internet. Napster was, you know,
the Wild T1 landlines. Napster,
in 98,
the Wild West.
That was like beyond cutting edge. In 98, people still had 56K modems. And we had our Where Is we had the shared porn and games and music. For some reason, they allowed a network to, on our floor. Where's? Yeah, where?
Juarez.
Juarez. Pat might have had a Juarez server on IRC. Who knows?
I mispronounced it many throughout my youth.
So that was the Wild West. So, of course, we all got Unreal and played Unreal. Imagine before this, like, not having first... I mean, most people hadn't played probably a first-person shooter over the internet before, 98, at least being this solid. I mean, I remember trying to play Duke Nukem 3D or Doom, and it was okay on the 56K modem. It wasn't great. It was okay. You could play it. But on a T1 landline, you're connected up, 8 guys playing Unreal, like 4-on-4. Holy shit, was that fun. We'd play for hours sometimes. So that reminds me that because that's when I got into it while I was also pledging the fraternity. Pledged the fraternity, what is that, like spring of 2000, was that 99? pledge. And there'd be times playing where you get the call. If you're in a fraternity back then, you got the call. And where I went, it was a pretty big fraternity in Greek life school. You get the call from someone at the frat saying, get your ass up here. You have 10 minutes. And then Rocco down the hall would get it. So I had to stop playing the game. You literally had to stop what you're doing. You run up. They did what's called a lineup. What's a lineup, Ian, you ask? A lineup is they line you up. You can't look at any of the brothers' faces. Heads down, hands, you know, hands down. And they just fucking berate you for like 45 minutes straight.
Yeah.
They get in your face. Like they're like wannabe drill sergeant.
I lived above a frat house. I used to have to listen.
Above?
To
you were, they actually had it connected like to a dorm?
So, no, it was my apartment. My second apartment was above a storefront. And then behind it was a frat house apartment. It was essentially like okay.
And yeah, ours was actually, it was a house.
Yeah. No, not everyone was. Some of them were just large apartments.
Yeah. So they line you up and they be, you know, they yell at you, they berate you. And it didn't like they, even if like they like make you make tests about knowledge of the fraternity, who the fuck cares? But they'd be like, oh, you didn't clean this properly. It was just an excuse to yell at you.
Yeah. Of course.
Because for the most part, most of us, as when we pledging, weren't fuck ups. We did. We cleaned the house. You're required to clean the house because you have to clean the house when you live there. That's understood. They didn't hire a maid or whatever. Some houses did. So they would yell at you. They make you do push ups and things like that. So whenever I think of Unreal, I think about that because sometimes even that was late. They would do that at like 1 a.m. One in the fucking morning.
Oh, yeah. It would be late.
They would do that. Or they want to be sadistic. They would call you back right after you got back. Oh, we yelled at you 45 minutes? Come back up. We'll yell at you another 45 minutes. So it's torture. It's psychological torture. They're trying to inflict on you. At this point, I'm like, well, you're kind of stuck with it at that point because they do it in a way where like you have to make yourself, if you pledge, it's understood you have housing at the house. You're no longer eligible then for the regular on-campus housing. You have to try to find your own. So they kind of fuck you. You're kind of forced at that point for the most part, or right. It comes to complication. So that's why whenever I think of Unreal, it's like hard to detach from that time because that was awful. Plus, I tore my ACL that spring. So I'm pledging the fraternity on a torn ACL playing intramural basketball as well. So I was like, that was bad. And then it goes into sophomore year. I'll leave the story where I almost died in the fraternity for another time because that's a whole other thing. I don't want to get into that. So sophomore year, it turned into I was depressed, really depressed because I had the surgery. I rehabbed the hell out of it. The guy said I was the best quickest rehab he ever saw. I rehabbed the hell of it, but I still fell into like being depressed. I hated being in the fraternity. So I only liked like four, even our pledge class out of like the 13, 14 guys, 15 guys, I liked like four of them. I'd be like, okay, I can hang out with you and talk to you guys. So I felt like I was like an outcast, and I didn't hide the fact that I didn't like anyone really, especially the seniors and juniors. I didn't like them that much because they just abused you. For months. How can you like them after that? A lot of the guys that pledge are like, oh, yeah, that's just the way it works. Not me. I'm not like that. You can't break me. That doesn't work with someone like me. It doesn't work. I'll just fucking hate you, and I'll live with you, but I'll hate you. So, like, it was awkward because when you're a sophomore, they can't do anything to you. They can't make you drink anything or hit you or whatever. Not that I don't think I was ever hit. Other houses actually abused, like physically abused. That didn't happen here. But then they made you drink. That's still abuse. So sophomore year, the games I played, I put on like 35, 40 pounds my sophomore year. I ballooned up after the surgery. Not just because of the surgery. I was listless, but I enjoyed playing Rogue Spear. Rainbow Six Rogue Spear. Played it on, you know, with some of the sophomores and other, the people like that. And so like, and Worms Armageddon. So those are the other games where I'm like, that's where I played a ton of it was, you know, like sophomore year at the frat house, and like those, that was bad. That like year and a half span of like last semester freshman year and the entire sophomore year, that was bad from like age 19 to like almost, age 19 to like 20 and a half, we'll just say. That was really bad time in my life. I'll tell more about my fraternity stuff in the future when it's appropriate, but fuck them. Fuck you guys. Fuck them. Yeah. Whenever I talked about the fraternity stuff, people say I couldn't picture being a fraternity. I'm like, yeah, me neither. I'm not the personality for it, to be into that shit. But you know how they get you, Ian? Hey, you're going to get girls and you're going to have fun. It's like when you're 18 years old and never with women, that works. It does. Where you don't fit in. Here's a group of guys that are automatically your friends.
Right.
Like 35, 40 guys that are going to be your friend. They're not going to be your friend. They're not going to be your friend. It's bullshit. Fraternities are largely bullshit.
All bullshit.
I hear once in a while, oh, the straight fraternities. I'm like, yeah. Okay, there's probably a few exceptions. A large chunk of them are bullshit. And sororities, a large part are bullshit. But the sororities torture girls as well, from what I heard, in different ways. I won't get into that. They did that stuff as well. All right, well, that was some darkness.
I love darkness.
You want to hear about my near-death experience in the future?
No.
You don't want to hear about it?
In the future, sure.
You're done with it right now?
I'm done with it right now.
Ian, we got voicemails.
We do.
You go to anchor.fm/thecu podcast, and you can leave us messages and tell us how much you like or you hate us. Hopefully it's not the latter. Hopefully it is the former.
Hey, Pat and Ian, it's Nick in Indianapolis, Indiana. Quick question. Nintendo Switch has a lot of games out physically already. There's companies like Limited Run Games and Super Rare Games that are fairly new to the market of video game collecting. Do you think these Switch games with outrageous prices already will continue climbing in value? Do you think collectors will want to seek out these games in the future with already thousands of physical games on the platform? Thanks.
It's not thousands of physical
not
games.
Not thousands. There's thousands of games. There's
thousands of games. Yeah. There's hundreds of games.
Yeah, I do think the prices will keep going up. Open pre-orders, I think, in my opinion, more or less absolves Limited Run of, you know, any blame here. If you want it, you've got a long time to get it. All games are limited to a certain degree. You know, and it's like we said, I hated the messaging that Nintendo put on the Super Mario 3D World.
Or 6 months.
Or Super Mario 3D All-Stars. But that's...
That's like any game, though.
That's any game that's getting one print run. It's not that crazy. So if you pay... But yes, we have seen, even with open pre-orders, some of these games are continuing to go up in price and sell for high amounts. And I think that will. And my reason for that is I think the Switch is the first time in a long time... there's something about the Switch that feels collectible, and that's not just me, but my boss and my friend Treg recently got back into game collecting through the Switch. He's all about it, buying up Switch games. And I think a lot of people do. You know, I don't buy physical games for my PS4. I don't buy physical stuff on my PC, obviously, but I still like to buy physical on the Switch when I can. There's something I like about collecting for it. And as long as there is a collector's market, you are going to see good games that have lower print runs than what we may have been seeing, you know, for actual mass release AAA titles. Yeah, the prices are going to get expensive.
Hey, this question is for Pat. My name's Ed. I just wanted to know if you could confirm the origin of two of your trademark asides, one being Lately and the other one being Evolution. Thank you.
Oh, the Evolution is a mystery. It's a song from the Evolution group. What was that, like early 2000s with Randy Orton, Dave Bautista, Ric Flair, and Triple H. And then Lately? But Lately, did you ever hear a clan? Is that what I do that sometimes? Lately, is that what it, do I ever do Lately? Ian? No?
No.
Okay, I think that's what I probably did that once or twice. That's where it comes from. All right, next.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Sean from Youngstown, Ohio. I was just curious
if you think
that third-party controllers have met or exceeded OEM expectations now that technology has improved.
Question for you.
I asked this especially because I saw the new Retro Fighters controllers for the N64, and they look pretty nice. You guys run a great podcast. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Sean. I would say, I think we've gotten over the decades that third-party stuff has slowly crept up to catch up.
We have, in my experience, yeah, I think we have gotten to the point where most third-party stuff is, we're getting to the point where there is comparable, at the very least, there's comparable third-party controllers to replace your old vintage gaming controllers. The stuff that I've been able to check out from Retrobit, and yes, provided to me, you know, to check out, I've been really happy with all of that. I am less happy with Hyperkin in terms of a percentage of their stuff that is good, but the stuff that they do make that is good.
So within their run, the quality varies.
Well, no, it's more like not even within the run. Oh. It's like I can stand behind like their N64 controllers. They call them Cadets. The Cadet controllers, okay. Really good. I've had no problems with them. No one's ever brought them back. They're very similar in shape to the originals.
One in the clamshell packaging?
No, it's in a cardboard box.
Okay.
They're like really nice controllers, and everyone seems to love them. There are definitely things I've tried from Limited Run. Hyperkin that I don't like. I don't like their TurboGrafx-16 controller.
Okay.
The D-pad sucks. But there are definitely, I think for every retro system out there, there is probably a good third-party solution for you.
Got it. Next.
Hey, what's up, Pat and Ian? This is Brad from Orange County, California. I was just listening to the episode where Ian was talking about good cover-based shooters, and he talked about Tom Clancy's The Division. I haven't played that one, but I'm a huge retro gamer, and the one that I love is Win Back for the Nintendo 64. Pat might have even reviewed it for a certain upcoming N64 guidebook.
What?
But anyway, it's a great, great cover-based shooter.
So Win Back.
Everyone's told me to play it, and I haven't yet.
I haven't played that, but if it's cover-based, that's interesting, because I don't know if the N64... Besides that, what would it have with a cover-based shooter?
Nothing. It's probably unique to the system. But wow. Everyone's always told me to play Win Back.
I did not review that.
And thank you for reminding me. I will definitely attempt to do that next time I see a copy come in.
I think that was reviewed already. I do not have that one. I did not take any first-person or third-person shooters. I wanted to, but I was like, I'll let others handle that. But I was curious about it. GoldenEye's still up for grabs. Someone's going to get new GoldenEye.
Hey, Pat, Ian. Just a quick hypothetical. Had Super Mario Bros. 2 Japan come to the U.S. circa 86, would it have been a black box game?
It would have been a black box game. It probably would have. I'm trying to think. There were no sequels that were black box games. There were none that like, hey, this is the second one.
Yeah.
Junior doesn't count. That was an early arcade.
Right. It was already released.
I thought at the time. It wasn't like an Ice Climber 2. that's what I mean. Or Donkey Kong 3. Next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Andrew from Buffalo. Got a quick question for Ian today.
What's up?
Ian, as we all know, you're Buffalo's favorite son.
Oh.
So if someone like Melinda Gates were to approach you and offer to finance a run for the mayor of the city,
mayor.
What would you do? Would you run?
Ian's going to run for mayor. That'll be a day.
If you won, what would you do? Would you give Pat the key to the city? Raise taxes on your childhood bully? Decree that the Anchor Bar's wings are actually overrated? Oh. I'm very interested to find out. Also, Pat, how would you run your spoiler campaign against him? Well, either way, guys, thanks a lot for the great show, and keep them coming.
So there's some inside Buffalo humor there.
I probably would not actually run for mayor. I have no real interest in politics.
Mayor.
But that's a fun question to think about. I would actually, but to touch on something, I would actually declare Anchor Bar's wings just fine.
Oh, okay.
So here's the deal. For a long time, so in Buffalo, lots of places make wings. Lots of places make great wings. But it always falls down to, if you want to go to look at the classic battle, it's between Anchor Bar, the supposed birthplace of wings, and Duff's. And I have always fallen on Team Duff's when it comes to which wings are actually better. I think Duff's knock Anchor Bar out of the water. Never thought Anchor Bar had bad wings, but compared to other, you know, places you could go, there are just always better places to go. However, there is one other Anchor Bar location in Anaheim, and it opened, I want to say, within the past few years. And when I went up there for a baseball game recently, my buddies and I, four out of the five of us, all being from Buffalo, went to the Anchor Bar and got wings. And you know what? I'm sure part of it is because I have been out of Buffalo for so long, and finding actual good wings in San Diego is impossible. Their wings were a lot better than I gave them credit for.
Okay.
I'm still a Duff's guy, but Anchor Bar's wings, they're fine. They're fine.
Okay.
Oh, also, I'm really big into India Walton, and it looks like she's going to be the next mayor of Buffalo.
The Buffalo listeners are going ecstatic right now, Ian. They're like, yes, Ian, you tell the wings like it is to us. All right, next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Dee from South Carolina. My husband has a massive game collection and has an app on his phone which keeps track of the value of each individual game but categorizes by console as well. The problem is he changes password on his phone. Okay. So how am I supposed to access the app to sell his games if anything happens to him?
Wait a minute, D. D, why do you have you have the password to the phone? Were you supposed to have the password? Okay. That's how it is? Okay. Oh, man. This is what I'm going to say. We tried this before. What happens if, like, someone dies and you got to sell these games? It's not easy. It can be overwhelming. If I pass away, you know, would my family hire Ian to, like, help sell all this shit? I mean, how would, like, you'd have to hire someone you trust that wouldn't just, like, rob you blind.
Right.
And be like, oh, Ian can be like, oh, you know, I'm not saying you do it, but, like, if you hire somebody, like, oh, this game is worth nothing, I'll just take this one, and you take fucking Magical Chase. You know, like, you have to trust someone, to be honest, that could also help you price all this stuff. We're talking, you know, thousands of unique stuff, where, like, you may not be selling thousands of unique things, but you got to still pick out the ones that are valuable and sell them separately. You have to help the people out.
Yeah.
You're in a tough spot. You're in a tough spot. It's rough. That's the only thing I can say. You got to hire someone, or else you trust the local game store to just give you, you know, pennies on the dollar. Just take it all away and give me like 25 or 30% cash, maybe. Maybe. But you probably won't even get that deal if it's a lot of stuff they don't want. I don't know. Depends also how good the stuff is, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Why are you looking at me like that? You think about it, if you have to take care of the stuff, if I keel over, you're like, Pat, please don't die.
I really want to talk about Tommy Tallarico threatening legal action right now.
Oh, go for it, Ian. Is this an update?
Yeah.
Update.
So, to a previous segment?
This is pretty impressive. He is, let me just find that link again. Here it is. In response to Sam Mekovich actually posting the article himself, Tommy Tallarico responded, and I'm sure with plenty of, no smiley emojis, surprisingly.
No.
So he's serious. Way to post copywritten confidential information, not for the public, as well as other info that is false. We'll make sure the folks at Ars Technica are aware. Legal incoming. Enjoy. That is a dude having a big wet shit on the internet. There is no leg for you to stand on. It's your fault you didn't fucking secure your own information. He's simply reporting on the information he had. And you are asking for a pile on at this point.
You are not going to get far with that.
You think you can keep bullying people around, Tommy, but you can't.
No. You are not getting far.
This
reporter is allowed to report on things. That is not illegal. This will get laughed at. This will get laughed at. Sorry, back to our regularly scheduled stuff. Where were we just at? The value. Okay, next.
Hey, guys, Army of the Dead has been on Netflix for more than a week now. Ian, you can't just say you're going to watch a Zack Snyder film and then not give us a review.
You're right.
We await what you have to say.
Well, should this be the first
movie segment? Review? Yeah. All right.
Should we watch it together and record a commentary? We got to watch it. God, you're gonna make me watch a Zack Snyder movie. You gonna do that? All right. Next.
Hey Pat. Hey Ian. It's Foxandra from New Jersey, renowned voice actress, according to Ian.
Yeah. What?
I was listening to the segment the other day about Comic Con pronouncing Smash Brothers. Listen, the only con I know these days is the con of my ex convincing me to date him for a year. Oh. Let me tell you, the only smash he was doing was on a CRT. So anyway,
jam.
I heard you two talking about SNES and SNES, and again, I'll have some opinions. First of all, Super NES is like 5 syllables, which is the same as saying Super Nintendo. So what's up with that? Just say Super Nintendo. You think you're fancy or something?
I love this, by the way. I love this shtick. It's good. Hold on.
And you know what me and my brothers, that's right, my brothers, not my bros, would say? We'd say sneeze, because we'd be like, hey, let's go play something on the Z-Sneeze. Now that I think about it, that was around the time I worked in the bagel shop. And Pat, that reminds me, we always called it tail of ham. All that talk of pork roll, and I didn't know what you were on about. Yeah, that's some good stuff, though. And wait, how much time?
All right. I'm not familiar with this individual, Boxandro.
They're a streamer and a very fun person to follow on Twitter.
I will say that I love the attempt at the Jersey accent. You're probably not from Jersey though, but I like the attempt at like the North Jersey accent, like the Dagon accent.
She picked the accent though and stuck with it. It did not fluctuate. That's where I'm going to give some points there.
No, that's very good.
Unlike our Australian friend who tried to do it,
but,
couldn't get any consistency.
No, that was good.
She was very consistent with the Jersey accent.
No, that's if you told me that person wasn't a voice actor actress, I would believe. Yeah,
they're also not. That's a running joke. They said doing voice acting for something, and I was like, "Oh, really? Congratulations!" And they were like, "No, I'm not actually doing it. Did you listen to the clip I posted? And it was them doing a Jersey accent.
That's a good cartoonish. That's like a Jersey accent you'd hear in The Simpsons.
I like your voice. You have a nice voice.
What's up with that? I like that. I like that a lot. We'll do a couple more.
Hey guys, this is Tim from Louisville, Kentucky. Love the podcast. Work in the steel mill.
I love this. You get Jersey, you get Kentucky, you get Buffalo, you get the UK. We're international. Oh, sorry.
Steel mill, so you guys have got me through a few long
12-hour nights. Steel mill. Awesome.
My question is regarding graded games. Do you think companies like WADA and other grading companies, do they have an obligation to do population reports for the games they grade? It just seems like if you were bidding on a game and come to find out there was thousands of that grade, it would make it worth a lot less. So, interesting to hear what you have to say, and keep up the good work.
No one's listening to me about this anymore. I don't think we've got any friends left at WADA for commenting.
We never had friends at WADA, technically.
For commenting on some of the things that I've found odd. But yes, I do think a population report would go a long way to making this feel better.
It'd be ethical. If they had ethics, they would do it. They know what passes through their grading warehouse. They have the numbers internally, I can probably guarantee you. But the reason why they don't release them is because then you'd realize, wait a second, there's how many billions of sealed Atari Spider-Man games out there that anyone can look up anytime, and then therefore you won't be bidding thousands of dollars, and then you won't have everyone else sending in all their Atari. It would hurt their business to file population reports. That's the answer. It wouldn't help them in any way. It would just hurt them. The only way you can actually... Okay, it could help if there was like weird esoteric titles that I looked up. Hey, I got this copy of Winter Games laying around sealed that I bid on by accident. And are there any others that are being created? Oh, there's only two? Maybe this is rare. So there could actually be some help, I think, to the market. But it would overall be, I think, a net negative, I think.
Yeah.
You agree? Like, it'd probably be a net negative overall if they released every population number for every game?
The value would certainly drop, yes, I think.
And then if the value drops, you get less people likely to get them graded. Because then why would I get it graded if that game's only, there's like a billion of those Spider-Man games and it's only worth $200 at this point? Why would I get it, graded? It makes sense. All right, one more? One more here.
Tommy Tallarico has entered the chat. I thought I explained what all this stock photo hullabaloo of Photoshop and Amico controllers into kids' hands, that this is exactly what stock photos are used for. When you try to get real kids to play your game system, and they just immediately start crying for hours. And you can't yell at them, because I tried that. I said, knock it off, you little monsters! This is a family system, and you are having fun right now! That didn't work, though. I don't know why. I originally wanted to get pictures of celebrities playing the Amico, but everyone said no celebrity be caught dead with this thing, which is pretty harsh, but it turned a light bulb on in my head. Boom! Let's just dig up the dead ones. But then I realized everything's all politically correct now, and I'd get canceled, so I said, okay, put them back in the ground. You guys are still welcome to come play, by the way. Got a partnership with Papa John's for a pizza.
Oh, Tommy.
Oh.
You scamp, Tommy.
You lovable scamp.
You trying to go after Ars Technical and your partnerships with Papa John's. Oh, that brought a smile to my face. Boom! Boom! All right, is that it for the CU podcast?
That's it.
Wow, this was a roller coaster in real time, Ian, this CU podcast.
I'm feeling it's going to be an interesting couple of days for the Intellivision Amico.
Aren't you glad we covered this? And you didn't thought originally you'd want to do that article. Hey, come on, Ian. It's fantastic stuff.
Here we are.
Remember, our careers end on the podcast whenever this system comes out. So, we got to cover it till the end. That's the line right there. All right, well, enjoy your week, everyone. Have some fun.
Yeah.
Get some fresh air. Be safe. And summer is here. We got 4th of July is this weekend. When's the 4th?
Sunday.
Oh, that's always a good one because then you get the 5th off the next day. That's always a good one when you work for a living like I used to. In an office, you get that 5th off. You always want the Monday off. That's the key day. You always want the Monday off and not the Friday. You want the Monday off. You want to lean into that Sunday, get that extra day. That's my opinion, at least. All right, that's Ian.
Bye.
Ian's been very distracted by this stuff in real time. You've been really distracted this last podcast.
Yep. There's a lot. It's accelerating.
It's accelerating already? I can't wait to end the podcast and see what's happening on Twitter.
Frank and Kelsey have already chimed in on it.
Oh, boy!
Tommy Talarico's current tweet says, Ars Technic journalist Sam Redd just illegally posted a bunch of confidential information about Intellivision in his ridiculous misinformed article. Yeah, misinformed. The private info had not for public use and confidential all over it. Unfortunately, legal action will need to be taken. Frank retweeted it just saying there's so much to unpack here. This rules.
God, I love Frank.
All right.
And Kelsey.
Bye, everyone.
All right, bye, everyone.